All right, family, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show here in the land of Florida. Let me get this image off. We got a special guest coming up in 1 second. Before we start off, prayers out to our friends and family out in the Los Angeles area with the this historical fire that has devastated the community. Prayers out to our friends up in Atlanta. Saw a bunch of snow over the last 24 hours. It crippled that community. And so we send the prayers currently in Orlando, Florida. It is 70 degrees and sunny outside. But no, y'all know we are not spared from devastating weather. We had Hurricane Milton that came through a few months ago. So we all get our fair share of devastating weather. But this storm that's in Atlanta area and what's happening in Los Angeles, I think that's is at another level. Coming to the show. Distinguished guest today, the youngest person in U.S. Congress. We want to welcome to the show Congressman Maxwell Frost. How you doing today, Congressman Frost?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you back on the show. I think it might be our first time doing a video slash radio.
Yeah,
I know we've done a lot of radio. How are things looking for this upcoming session in Congress?
I'll tell you, things are looking a little grim because of obviously we have the Republican majority in the House, in the Senate, and then obviously President-elect Trump will become the president of the United States in just about a week or so. And that's not good. But I will say, like, you know, people should rest assured we're going to do what we've done the last 2 years. I'm going to fight like hell for the things I believe in. I'm going to fight against the things I don't believe in that I think are harmful for this country. But at the same time, I'm always going to try to find common ground and try to move things forward anyway. You know, my politics is I believe we need big, bold, transformational change in this country if we're to really help the vast majority of working people. Healthcare for all, housing as a human right, getting the climate crisis on the wraps, like all these different things, they're going to require more of our government than what we've seen. And, you know, I like to be blunt with people and honest with people because I think part of the reason half the country doesn't vote is because politicians lie a little too much. Ooh. And so the honest truth here is we're not going to see the bold transformational change we need in the next 2 to 4 years because of the way that the politics is stacked up. We, however, we still got to fight to take steps in the right direction and set up the political landscape so we can get to the big change. And we do both at the same time. They're not, these things don't work against each other. They work in tandem, as we know throughout history. So that's my goal. You know, I'm not one that chooses one thing and just sticks with it. I'm going to try to do a few things at the same time because I think that's why people have sent me to D.C.
Right. This thing dealing with healthcare, do you think we can get a compromise to lower the cost of healthcare? Republicans saying they want a better healthcare system. You guys believe in pushing it forward to get a better healthcare system. Is that a compromise somewhere?
I don't see it because the problem here is I always tell people, like, if you see two people saying we need to fix a problem, that's good. That's not step one. Maybe it's like step point five. Step one is making sure we're coming at it from the same, we're coming on the right foot together, right? And the problem is where we come at it from is we believe, and I believe, I don't want to speak for every Democrat, I believe in a very sensible solution, right? I'm signed on to a bill called Medicare for All. And what that does is take the most popular government program, Medicare, mm-hmm. and little by little expand it until everybody is covered under that program. So that way we all are covered with healthcare. And then we also work at improving Medicare to cover you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. That's what I believe in. The problem here is a lot of my Republican colleagues, they don't believe that the government should have such a large stake in healthcare. And they believe that to get to universal healthcare, we have to continue to go into the direction of privatizing it. And my problem is this. I always tell people, look at who the thing is accountable to. Corporations are not accountable to the people. Corporations are accountable to shareholders. And my problem with privatizing healthcare more and more and more and more, even more than we have it now, it's almost fully privatized, to be honest, is we're in that right now. It hasn't worked. There's tens of thousands of people who die every year because they don't have health insurance. most Americans don't go to the doctor regularly because they don't have health insurance or their insurance doesn't cover it and it's too much money. So all this is a problem. And we got to look at the numbers. Medicare is incredibly popular. It works. Medicare spends less per person than private healthcare does because it's not there to make money. It's there to work for the people. And that's the solution I'm for. But I'm for other solutions too. We could talk, but I believe that everyone should have healthcare, and I don't believe it should be a private company doing this for everybody. And that's why I find it hard to believe that at least that will be a bipartisan compromise. Now, there might be bipartisanship on lowering the cost of drugs. You know, like we want to go after what's called pharmacy benefit managers, which oftentimes are the middleman between consumers, pharmacies, and then big pharma. We need to go after big pharma. So maybe there's some things we can do there. But the big thing we need, I think we have to get the politics right to get to that place.
Well, I know talking to some doctors, they said that Medicare doesn't pay them their fair wage, and they feel like they support Medicare for all, but they feel like they're not getting a fair wage too. So I think there's both sides of this argument, and I definitely believe in universal healthcare. It should be on the table.
It should be. And I get that argument too, because I was speaking with a lot of providers who say similar things. I mean, you know, the first thing I'll say is we're talking about, it's a bit of a change of the system, right? And as we change healthcare in this country, it'll change the relationship between obviously providers, and there wouldn't be health insurance company, it would be the government. And doctors will still do well. I mean, I encourage people to look at doctors around the world in a lot of countries where you have similar systems. You know, the doctors are doing well. They're doing their thing. But I get it too, because a lot of doctors go to school and they get massive debt. And so even though they have these high salaries, and we might look at it and be like, yo, that's a lot of money, they're paying off hundreds of thousands of dollars of student debt. So as we work on this program, do we have more debt forgiveness in it? You know, and different things like that. Like, we have to look at it holistically. And because I get where you're coming from, and I believe we got to look at every part of this. But if we look around the world, the doctors are doing fine in the countries where we have this. And the fact of the matter is, we don't have a healthcare system in this country. We have a sickness care system. People are waiting till they get super sick. Then they go to the hospital, sometimes on the brink of death. And they get a huge medical bill. Medical debt is one of the largest contributors to bankruptcy in this country. So that's like really not acceptable. And I think we really gotta. This is gonna require a big change. But I say we have a big change with a familiar solution, and that's why I'm for Medicare for all. But
what committee is you assigned to in D.C.?
So committees are kind of, you know, changing for the next 2 years, and so we'll see what happens. But right now, I'm on the House Oversight Committee. We oversee the entire government, and we do oversight into the government, into government agencies. It's also kind of crazy. If anyone pays attention, this is like the committee where there's a lot of, you know, we handled the Joe Biden impeachment. I'm doing that in quotations for people just through audio. Impeachment. You know, kind of trials or whatever we had. We are the ones that looked into Hunter Biden and all this stuff. And so that happens in my committee. And there's a lot of yelling and a lot of craziness, but it's important we have our fighters there. And then my other committee, which is more of a heads down, get to work committee, is science, space, and technology. And there I really am focusing on making sure young people, especially people of color, Black and brown students, have a place in being competitive in STEM, because it's really the future in technology. And there's a huge gap between Black and brown students and students who come from poor backgrounds and more affluent students and white students being able to get good competitive jobs in the jobs of the future. And we got to do a lot more to make sure our Black and brown students are competitive there. So I've been focusing a lot on that. And I've been focusing on hurricane preparedness, which, as we know, in Florida is a really big deal.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the legacy of President Biden. You had opportunity to work with him. And he's leaving office very soon. What impressed you about President Biden, and what are some of the things that you're proud of that stands out to you?
Yeah, first and foremost, and I see the picture you have up there, and I get to tell people where that picture's from. You know, when I first got to Congress, the first bill I introduced was to create a federal office of gun violence prevention. Because believe it or not, up until about a year and a half ago, we didn't have it. Gun violence was not did not have an office. There was little parts of the issue that were handled by like six different offices and agencies, but no one focusing on it and looking at root causes. How do we stop people from feeling that a gun is going to solve the problem in the first place? So I wrote the bill to create the first Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Now, in a Republican Congress, I knew it wouldn't pass. But as an organizer, it's hard for me to take no as an answer. And what I did is I took a step back and said, how can I do this even though it won't pass the Congress right now? So I went to the president. I went to the White House. We worked with them and said, you can do this without Congress. You can make this office and put it in the White House and it can save lives. And we pushed with outside organizations. And one day I get that call from the White House and they said, Maxwell, not only is the president creating the first ever White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, but your bill is the framework for it. Can you come to the White House in a couple weeks to introduce the president so he can talk about it? And so that's why that photo you put up is from that press conference. And I'm a big guy. I'm not into like the photo op thing. Like I'm into the photo op with the that where we're announcing the thing. And that's where that's us announcing the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, which was staffed up with survivors of gun violence. I'm going to tell you, one of my good friends, Greg Jackson, was the deputy director there. Greg Jackson, this is the experience that was running this office. He was walking on the streets in Washington, D.C. He's from the DMV area. And there was a drive-by that happened. And he was shot. And he almost And this brother woke up in the hospital. He's a black man, woke up in the hospital to not doctors, to police questioning him like he was the criminal. And that experience, this is like a lot of experience, right? It's gun violence, but it's also criminal justice reform. It's also racism. It's all this stuff. That experience was helping to run this office. And they went in there and said, yes, we need good gun laws, which we do need. I'll never give up on that. But what we also need to do is give money to on-the-ground local organizations that are helping to mentor young kids, especially young black kids, to help intervene in instances of violence between gangs and groups and stop the violence outside of jailing people. How do we stop the gun from being fired in the first place? And I know a lot of people are listening to this saying, that's utopia. That'll never happen. Well, guess what? Gun violence in cities across the nation went down by a good amount over the past years because of this. And this works. When we put money in the community, it works. And actually, Orlando has a city office of gun violence prevention, which works with local groups. Gun violence has gone down in the city of Orlando as well. Enough? No, we got a lot more to do. One life is too much. And so honestly, I mean, I can talk about a lot, but I want to focus on something specific because, that office has helped Orlando. We've gotten, I think it was like $2 or $3 million, our city to help gun violence here, in our communities. And so that's one of the things. And it really highlights, you know, President Biden, when I first elected, he called me and he was like, you know I'm known for being the oldest president, but you know, he said, did you know, when I was elected to the Senate, I was 29 years old. He was actually too young to be sworn in with everybody else. He had to wait about a week for his birthday to be sworn in. So he came in kind of like me, super young, and now he was the oldest president. And he really brought me in early on as someone to give ideas and speak with him. And I said, we need to use this access to deliver for the community. So we got the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. What else did we get? A passport office for Orlando. Which has been, people have been trying to get that for a while. And we worked hard on that, you know. We built the case, we used the relationship and said, look, Orlando is the top tourism place in the country. Passport office it's not like a sexy political issue, you know. I'm not going to put it in an ad or something, but this is like local stuff that people care about and it's important. And
now,
so
you're talking to someone, you know, we take kids to Ghana every year for free and we're taking kids from here, here in Pine Hills. It's been times we had to fly to Miami or drive to Miami to get the same day passport. And I'm like, all the people we got in Central Florida, we got to go way to Miami. So that move was a major move that is really, really, really going to help us out. Is it open already or is it still building?
It is. Oh no, it's still going. It's gonna take. So we made the announcement maybe 6 or 7 months ago. It's gonna take a couple years to get it up. My hope is within this next term I'm in. My hope is by the end of it, we'll be cutting a ribbon. Wow. The only unknown is obviously we have a new administration coming in. Now the good thing here is even though I disagree with Marco Rubio on a lot, he's the new Secretary of State coming in, and he's from Florida. I feel he'll be more sympathetic to continuing the song.
Oh, wow. So he has the power to stop it.
He has the power to stop it. It's the State Department. So he could come in and say, no, we're going to end this. But I you know, and I've spoken with him in his office about this passport agency. He was always supportive of it. And so my hope is it'll continue. And this might be a place where we can work together because, he knows we need it. This is a bipartisan thing.
Wow. I know you got to go. Anything else you want to share with Orlando before we go?
Well, I want to say thank you. You know, I'm coming into my second term here. Thank you for sending me to D.C. to represent my home where I was born and raised. I think we did really good work the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Fighting for what we believe in, bringing home resources and things that we need. Looking at the next 2 years, it's a different it's a different field, right? I'll be honest, we're in a little bit of a different place right now because my party doesn't have any power in D.C. But what I do think people will see is we're still going to be able to deliver, still be able to bring home resources, and we're going to fight for what we believe in because I believe the people closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And that's why, you know, tomorrow I'll be out knocking doors in the community and talking with people face to face. Like, what do you care about? What are you anxious about? What are you thinking about? So it can help influence my agenda for the next 2 years because, you know, it shouldn't just be me sitting in a room with my team, putting everything down and that's it. You know, you got to go out, knock doors. You got to go out and talk to people. You got to have town halls to hear where the anxiety is. I'll tell people one of the anxieties I hear about every day, old to young, all races, is housing. And that's going to be a big focus is on housing, homeowners and tenants.
Well, I hope we can get you on like on a monthly basis because there's still other stuff we would love to talk about. We had talked about what's going on in Gaza before, and I still want to get your opinion on that, how we can, you know, I travel around the world and outside of America, they're saying genocide in Gaza. Yeah. American media is not saying that. And it's troubling with all the bodies that are starting to add up since the last time we had talked.
I appreciate you bringing up the massacre that's going on in Gaza because, you know, I think with Trump coming in, we'll have to kind of see where things go. He obviously told Netanyahu, I'm going to let you finish the job. And what does that mean? Finish the job means finish the people. And people should know that in these times, we people might need to hit the streets again to make sure that the government knows that we don't want our taxpayer money going towards that. It's not being anti anything. It's being pro humanity. I'm not anti Israel. Right. I'm pro people. You know, I believe in a two state solution, but the problem is you're never going to get there if there's no people at the end of this. And the problem is we're seeing a disregard for human life. I want Israelis to be safe and secure. I want Palestinians to be safe and secure. And, you know, just yesterday I was at the funeral of Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter. And this was brought up in the funeral. I looked around. So people were a little uncomfortable. But, you know, he fought for peace in the Middle East. And he told the truth. And you know what? He did it from based on his Christian faith. And myself as a Christian as well, that's where I come from it as well. This isn't about being anti anybody, but being pro humanity. We're going to have to see where things go. My theory is we actually might be close to a ceasefire because Trump understands that this is a not popular war in this country. But my concern, and people need to pay attention here, I'm going to be paying attention. There might be a ceasefire, but look at what's going on in the other hand. Because the thing here is Bibi Netanyahu is friends with Trump. They're both right-wing leaders. And Bibi Netanyahu could do Trump a political favor and give him a ceasefire within the first month. So Trump can go out and say, look at me. I got in, and in 1 month, I handled what Biden couldn't in a year. But pay attention, because there might be a ceasefire, but there could be worse things going on. like U.S. being okay with further annexation of the West Bank, like all these different other things going on. So we really got to pay attention. It's hard to tell what will happen, but we'll be paying attention. You know, I'm proud that I represent such a large group of Jewish siblings, of Palestinian siblings here in Central Florida. We're a very diverse community. We got to stand against hate, anti-Semitism, bigotry, anti-Palestinian sentiment, all of that. And just, you know, look at the world through the eyes of the most vulnerable. That should be kind of what we're thinking about. But I appreciate you bringing it up, because we got to fight for humanity here.
Well, people love you here in Central Florida, and I see that fire you have, and you, the election is over, but you're still knocking on doors, man. So I love it. Thanks, I love it. Well, make sure you have a beautiful weekend. Looking forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, man. God bless you. Thank you.
Take care. All right, family. That was Congressman Maxwell Frost. We're going back to more music right here on 98.5 The Wire.